From WBUR Boston, I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I know that you've been fooling around on me right from the start. So I'll take back my ring and I'll take back my heart.
From Taylor Swift leaping into the mosh pit to the Blue Bloods of Bluegrass, Nashville today is a broad musical church, but smack dab in the middle pews sit Vince Gill and Paul Franklin. They're two of the most prolific award-winning musicians in that town. Their new album pays tribute to Merle Haggard and Buck Owens, and they're not fooling around. This hour, On Point, Vince Gill, Paul Franklin, and the Bakersfield Sound. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation never ends. Do you know Vince Gill? His gorgeous voice, his mean guitar, his beautiful songs? Are you a fan of Paul Franklin and his pedal steel guitar? Call and tell us why. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Nashville are Vince Gill and Paul Franklin. They're just out with their new album, Bakersfield. Vince Gill has sold 26 million albums over his career. He's won 20 Grammy Awards and 18 Country Music Association Awards. Vince, welcome to the show.
Thanks, buddy. How you doing, John?
Doing great. Paul Franklin is also one of the best-regarded, most-awarded session musicians in Nashville. He's played pedal steel and more with everybody from Barbara Mandrell and Barbara Streisand to Mark Knopfler and Megadeth. Paul, welcome to you as well.
Hello, John. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. And let me just start by asking you to explain to viewers who may not know what it is. What is the Bakersfield Sound?
I think the Bakersfield Sound is probably best described as pretty honky-tonk beer joint-minded, pretty straight-ahead country music. You know, it's about as hardcore as it's ever been. You know, and I think that you kind of have to remember Bakersfield in response to what Nashville was doing at the time. Country music was pretty smooth. It was full of singers that were like crooners, like Jim Reeves and those kinds of folks, and Eddie Arnold, and they had strings.
More strings pretty, than pedal steel.
Yeah, kind of cosmopolitan kind of records. And Buck and Merle came along in the early 60s, and they were out there in California, and man, they kind of had a band mentality, you know, almost like a rock band. There was the little five-piece band, and that was the records. You know, they played these records, and they were driving. They were these great shuffles, not unlike what Ray Price was doing and some of the other folks, but just a little more bare bones and a little more, you know, a little more rock and roll to it.
Paul, talk about the role of the instrument that you play and what brought it onto the scene and how it changed the sound.
Okay, the instrument I play is called a pedal steel. It comes from the Hawaiian instrument of years ago, but I think Alvino Ray back in the 30s, I think he was instrumental in developing, adding pedals to it. But Webb Pierce came along and had a record called Slowly, where you could hear the sound of the pedals, and that's when everything changed for this instrument. And So basically the role, especially in the Bakersfield music, is to twang. You know, it's all these bending sounds. And that's kind of in context with the guitar playing styles.
And that didn't exist? Those twangs didn't exist before
Bakersfield?
No,
they didn't. No, not that style. The steel guitar was played more like this.
Softer.
Very, very beautiful and very soft. Yeah.
Let's take a listen. We just came into the segment with your take on "Fooling Around" by Buck Owens. Let's listen to how Buck Owens did it.
I know that you've been fooling around on me right from the start, so I'll take back my ring and I'll take back my heart. And when you're tired of fooling around with two or three, come on home and fool around with me.
Now, Vince, what drew you to that song and led you to include that one on this record?
Oh, it just, man, it sounds like a cold beer.
Yeah.
You know, it's so good. And I think what I... I was most drawn to, as much as anything, was the way that the vocals worked. Nashville had a way of using more background singers, of a big, you know, choral kind of group or four or five-piece background group. And just listen to the two-part harmony. You know, that's Buck singing with himself. And it's magnificent. You know, it's so simple and so to the point. And it just didn't, I didn't think it ever needed any more than that. And
Don Rich was critical to that sound, wasn't he?
He was. Don sang on a lot of those records, but a lot of people don't realize that that's really Buck singing with himself in the earliest years, doing the harmonies himself. And then he found Don Rich, and they started doing those TV shows and playing together, and the whole world thought Don Rich sang on all these records. And he did on quite a few, but the earliest ones were Buck singing with himself. And I was probably as drawn to the harmony singing of Don Rich, because they had a really great TV show in the early 60s. They were the ranch shows that Buck did, and they were actually done in Oklahoma City where I grew up, and I never knew that. But I was as big a fan of Don Rich as I was of Buck Owens.
Paul, you and Vince are both around my age. You're not old enough to have heard that music when it was coming out. When did you discover Merle Haggard and Buck Owens? Was it with Buck Owens? Was it the Hee Haw show that so many of us remember?
Well, John, I'm 59, so I'm not that young. I was actually about 8, 9 years old when this music came out, and that's actually when I got my first pedal steel. My dad, when he bought the instrument, there were no teachers in Detroit. So he bought me the Year for Me album of Buck Owens, and he knew what the instrument should sound like, and he would point out all these typical steel parts that Ralph Mooney, who is the steel player we're listening to right now. And so I actually heard it. It was my first influence in music.
I think it was mine too, John. I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and I was the youngest kid in my family. So my big brother had these records. My mother and father had these records. And I knew of these records in 61, 62, 63 when I was 4 or 5 years old.
Were there other musicians in your family, Vince?
Yeah, my dad played a little bit. He played the banjo some. And I think Hee Haw came along, gosh, when we were probably 10 or 11 years old.
Yes.
And one of my great thrills in life was I got to do Hee Haw one time before it quit back in the 80s. But I knew of Buck and Merle long before Hee Haw. I think there was an element of Hee Haw that in some ways changed Buck Owens' thing. You know, he never seemed to be the same after the death of Don Rich.
Right.
And Don was on a lot of those Hee Haw shows. And then when he passed away, I think it was 74, Buck's whole thing changed. It never sounded – and I know Buck was probably trying to change with the times like most people do. But the magic of this music and this record is that we really tried to take the earliest times of both of their careers. And most of these songs were 60s songs, early 60s songs. And
well, let's let people hear a little bit of Merle Haggard, who I got to know through Okie from Muskogee, which was a big hit, as you guys recall. But this is a piece from Branded Man, which is a song that you include on your record, but that Merle Haggard first made. Let's listen. My mistake. That was your version of Merle, not Merle's. Talk
Man,
a little
I'm
bit.
Better.
Yeah, exactly. Talk a little bit about Merle Haggard.
Well, I think Merle Haggard is in my estimation, the best songwriter and singer that country music has ever produced. For the longest length of time and the longest length of greatness, I don't think anybody can surpass Merle Haggard. And Merle's music was maybe a little more driven by guitar than steel guitar, I think. You know, Buck's records were so much of a steel guitar presence with Ralph Mooney and Tom Brumley. But Merle's was, Roy Nichols and James Burton. James Burton was really the guy that started that really definitive kind of chicken picking emulating the steel guitar kind of guitar playing. What he would do back then is he started using banjo strings on his Telecaster. And back then, in the early days, most guys would use big, thick, wound strings.
Tell people what a Telecaster is and what its significance was.
It's a guitar made by Leo Fender, and the Fender Company started making the first guitars, I believe, in 1950. And there's something about the way they sound that is unlike any other guitar. It's a single-coil pickup guitar, whereas the Gibson was more of a double-coil pickup guitar and would have twice as much output as a Telecaster. But the Telecaster.
Do rock guitarists use it too?
Sure. I mean, that's what you see Bruce Springsteen playing all night long is a Fender Telecaster. There's not a, you know, it's one of the most versatile guitars in the world.
Paul, have you ever played with Merle Haggard?
I was lucky enough to play with Merle when he did the record with George Jones, Hits I Missed. And, it was a great experience. And I feel the same as Vince. I mean, I was very nervous when he entered the room. It's, I've recorded with a lot of folks, but when he walks in the room, it's, that's a giant.
Paul, hold that thought. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. You can join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255 with Vince Gill and Paul Franklin. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Your sweet voice. Go rest high on that mountain, son, your work on earth is done. Go to heaven, shout love for the Father.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Vince Gill and Paul Franklin about their new album, a tribute to the Bakersfield sound of Merle Haggard and Buck Owens. You can join the conversation. Does country music still have what made Haggard and Owens household names across the country and around the world? Have Gill and Franklin got it too? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Vince Gill and Paul Franklin are joining me from Nashville. And I want to ask you guys about the song that we've just heard, The Fighting Side of Me by Merle Haggard, from two perspectives. One was there was some political confrontation in that song. That was, of course, the beginning of the culture wars in the 1960s that we experienced, that we still see playing out today in some of our politics. But also the fact that Merle Haggard was sort of a tough guy. He spent some time in jail, and that was part of his persona. And Vince, I'm guessing that you've never spent a night in jail, and I'm wondering how a soft guy like you pulls off that that kind of stuff.
Well, if you knew my father, you'd know why I never went to jail. He was tougher than anybody I ever knew in my whole life. But, I think that it was surprising to me when I sang this song. I'm not a real macho and chest-beating kind of guy. And I couldn't back it up because I sing like a woman, but, I sing up high.
I read an interview with Alison Krauss, who said that you introduced her to a song and she thought it was right for her because you sounded like a woman.
That's true. We sing in the same key. But I think that I was really surprised by my reaction to this song. I do a lot of... I'm a big supporter of the military in our country and the sacrifice and the what they do. I think that after I've done some of that and I've lived a lot of my life seeing what the word sacrifice really means, I think most people hear the word sacrifice and they point it towards themselves. What do I have to give up? And it's more of a selfish word, I think, the majority of the time. But when I sang this song, I was taken with my realization of you know, I know how divisive we were in the 60s, and it changed the course of our country forever, and it'll never be as innocent and as prideful as it once was. And
Vince, and let me ask you from the standpoint of the country music business, you know, Johnny Cash also had that persona, Folsom Prison and that sort of thing. Is that still relevant in the persona of contemporary artists? I'm a fan. I watch with my daughter the show Nashville, which I saw you on, I believe, last year. There was a character on there who tries to improve the marketability of his records by getting in a fight, and he ends up in jail, and he tries to be kind of a bad guy. Couldn't really pull it off too well. Is that still relevant?
Oh, I don't know. I think the truth shows through in everything. I think most people can spot somebody that's a phony, and I think that's always the case. Once again, this song, I think what was great about Johnny Cash, was great about Merle Haggard, is they stuck up for the people that were either getting disenfranchised or weren't being treated fairly, and they stuck up for the underdog as much as anything. I don't know if you see as much of that today as you did back then.
Well, certainly country is quite mainstream today. Let's go to a listener. Sandy is calling from Somerville, South Carolina. Sandy, you're on with Vince Gill and Paul Franklin. Go ahead.
Hi, John. I just wanted to say I grew up with Merle Haggard and Buck Owens and George Jones and Johnny Cash and the ladies of country music, Loretta Lynn. And throughout my life, I've listened, you know, country is kind of my roots. I listen to all kinds of music now, but I have a real hard time going back to country music radio because to me, it's not country anymore. It's more more of a pop sound, and it just doesn't have the. I can't even feel the roots in it from when I used to listen to it a lot. So now, when I want to listen to country, I have to go to you know, albums, and you know, that dates me, and you know, CDs and
me too.
Like that. But.
Well,
you know,
Sandy, that's a great point. I want to ask Paul Franklin. Paul, do you have the same feeling about contemporary country music?
Well, I realize that the form of music we played in Bakersfield, there's not a lot of that going on today. But I think there's good music in all things. I grew up in Detroit, Sandy, so I grew up listening to Motown as much as I did Buck Owens and Merle. And but I miss this music. I think what we were doing here is just we're not really trying to say this is best or whatever. It's just music we love, and we miss it very much. And it was a chance for us to go in the studio and record songs we love. You know, and I think I'm an internet person, so I go on YouTube and I see all the old music, and so I just think there's different means to get the good stuff, and I think it's all out there if you search for it.
I want to take one more listener call before we're going to hear live from Vince and Paul. Larry is calling from Pittsburgh, Kansas. Larry, you're on with Vince Gill and Paul Franklin.
Hi, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
for
Larry.
My call. I just had a couple of questions. I'm also a musician. And I kind of wanted to get your take. It's a little off topic. It's certainly not Bakersfield sound, but folks like Towns Van Zandt, Steve Earle, Guy Clark, Chris Smither, and especially the Nashville guy, Daryl Scott. I just wanted to get your take on these kind of cats and the sound that they have and they've kind of produced over the years and stuck with. And I think a lot of this stuff that they call red dirt music now, I think was kind of born out of some of that. And of course, it's not quite as good in my opinion, but specifically, Daryl Scott and Chris Smither. I've listened to quite a bit of them lately, and I just kind of wanted to get your opinion on this kind of stuff.
Vince, what's red dirt music?
Well, that's I'm from red dirt country. I'm from Oklahoma, and I grew up with all those songwriters: Guy Clark, Towns Van Zandt, Rodney Crowell, Steve Earle. And they, you know, I'm probably younger than Steve. I mean, older than Steve, but they just wrote great songs, you know. And it wasn't pointed towards a radio hit for 3 minute hit and a hook that goes over and over and over. They were great storytellers, and that you compare that to a Merle Haggard. He was a great storyteller, you know, and those songs were so steeped in the truth. And I think that's what you're drawn to with Daryl and with Guy and those kinds of people, is they paint the most beautiful pictures with their songs, and they're real. You know, they're not all prefabbed and working hard to get on the radio. That's what makes them great.
Guys, I love listening to both of you talk, but I think I might love even more hearing you play a song. And I understand you're going to play Merle Haggard's I Can't Be Myself from your album. If you want to tell us anything about the song or jump right in, you go ahead.
This is a kind of a not as well known of a Merle Haggard song as some of the rest. And I've known this song since I was 18 years old. I found it on a Steve Young record. And I loved the song, and I bought the record, and I go, oh, well, no wonder I like it. Merle wrote it. And I've been singing it forever. It was never a big hit for Merle, and it's just the two of us, so bear with us. It's called I Can't Be Myself. It's a way of mine to say just what I'm thinking. And to do the things I really want to do. But you want to change the part of me I'm proud of. And I can't be myself when I'm with you. You never clothes I wear on Sunday, even though I don't believe the way you do. Oh, but I believe the Lord knows I'm unhappy. And I can't be myself when I'm with you. And be what pleases you. Down deep inside, I don't believe you really want me to. It's not my way to take so long deciding. I can't be myself when I'm with you. Guys, that was beautiful. I got two questions for you. First, for you, Vince, that little yodel thing that you hit, yeah,
is that easy to do? Could you fall out of bed and do that, or is that difficult?
No, it's not easy.
You know what that is? Is it really a Jimmie Rodgers lick? You know, I think Merle would cite Jimmie Rodgers as his favorite singer, and that's what's beautiful about discovering some of these people's music. What we're trying to do is we know that people that love this music and are hungry for this music are going to enjoy this. But we have an opportunity to turn a 15- or 16-year-old kid onto something that they may not know anything about. And it took Eric Clapton to teach me who Robert Johnson was. It took Merle Haggard to teach me who Jimmie Rodgers was, even though we had Jimmie Rodgers records in my house as a kid. That's where – that was his favorite singer, I think, was Jimmy Rogers. That's where that came from, that yodel.
Now, Paul, for you, I can't see you guys. You're in Nashville. Was it just the two of you playing just now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. On the record, when you have that same song, is it only the two of you, or do you have a whole set of other musicians who are playing along with you?
No, there's a full band, just like in Buck and Merle's music. There's bass, drums, piano, and electric rhythm. And some on some of the tunes, there's fiddle. We added the fiddle to it.
Now, I'm just interested in the ways in which people behind the scenes play such a huge role in the success of music. Now, that sounded totally sufficient to me, but clearly you thought that you needed the full band to produce the sound. I don't know if you've just seen, there's a documentary that's come out, 20 Feet from Stardom, about the backup singers for rock musicians and how integral they are to the sound, and nobody knows who they are. I'm sure that many, many musicians you work with are like that.
Well, yeah, you know, the interesting thing about Vince and I is that I am a studio musician, and I've been a sideman, so to speak, all my life. But Vince also started out that way. So we've been friends for 30 some odd years, and that's kind of where we're coming from. And the deal with this record is we wanted to not only salute the great songs of Merle and Buck and the great singing, but also the musicianship on this record. It's as much an instrumental record as anything else, and directly to point out how great the musicians were as well as the artists.
Well, speaking of artistry, aside from being known as a great songwriter and singer, Vince has also got a reputation as quite a good guitar player, invited by Mark Knopfler, in fact, once to join Dire Straits. Didn't do that, but we want to have a chance to listen to some of that guitar work off a Vince Gill song called Liza Jane from his album in 1991, Pocket Full of Gold. Let's take a listen. Great tune, Vince. Why,
thanks,
by the way, did you not join Dire Straits?
Oh, gosh. You know what? It was at a really interesting time. I had been in Nashville since 1983 trying to make records, and I'd been here many times before that. I made my first record in Nashville in 1975. So I'd been trying for a lot of years. I played with Pure Prairie League for a while, then I started my solo career. And in 83, I started making country records, and I always joke. I said, I made records for 7 or 8 years, but I couldn't prove it because nobody had them. But I just was in between record contracts, and I just got a new record deal with MCA Records, and that's when Mark called me and came to see me in New York City and asked me if I would have any interest in being in the band. And I mean, I was pretty much dead broke, and I didn't have a lot going on, and it would have financially saved my life. It would have done a lot of great things. But I said, man, if I say I'll do this, then it's going to kind of feel like I'm walking away from my country music career, and I would be giving up. And if I give up on myself, then nobody else is going to, going to help me out. So I said, man, this doesn't make any sense to say no to you, but I'm going to, just because I have to believe in myself. And
Vince, we are going to go out of this segment with If I Can Make Mississippi with Leanne Womack. I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Maine, Mississippi, then I'll be all right. These old white lines are lonely, and the headlines are bright. I've got just enough whiskey.
do. You look like you have been around a time or two. Meet me at midnight, that's when it all goes down.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook. I'm talking with Vince Gill and Paul Franklin, two of Nashville's finest. They're joining me from Nashville to talk about their new album, a tribute to the Bakersfield sound of Buck Owens and Merle Haggard. You can join the conversation. What's your favorite Vince Gill song? Does Paul Franklin's Pedal Steel tug at your heart? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. What you just heard was the song On the Outskirts of Town by the Nashville supergroup The Time Jumpers, which includes Vince Gill and Paul Franklin among its members. Let's talk about The Time Jumpers, guys. I guess you performed together last night, and I guess what I'm wondering is this the Nashville version of the Traveling Wilburys, which Tom Petty and Bob Dylan and George Harrison put together a few years ago with Roy Orbison?
Well, you know, the Time Jumpers are... It's a collaboration. I think it began as just a group of guys at the backstage of the Opry, a bunch of sidemen, along with Ranger Doug and a few guys, and they just loved to play Western swing. And so they started playing. Someone decided to book a gig, and 11 years later, we asked to join the band. But it's great therapy, music for, you know, all of us are involved. The entire band is comprised of studio musicians who play on all the current records. And but on Monday nights, we get to go back in time. I love the name of the band because it really describes what we do. We just play music we love and don't worry about if it's popular or the hip thing to do. We just, if we love it, we play it.
So more for fun, Vince, than for trying to sell records or make a new album?
Well, I mean, these boys, I can guarantee you they'd all love to be bigger than the Beatles, but
yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. You know, it really is a labor of love, and it's fun because, like Paul said, everybody makes their living doing something else, you know, and this is a chance for us to get together, have fun, play the songs we want to play, and it's an 11-piece Western swing band. Most of the music is steeped in the tradition of Bob Wills and maybe the 40s and the 50s of the country music period, and it's, for me... It's made me a better guitar player, getting to play with the level of musicianship that I do every night. And I've been in the band for a little over 3 years. And I used to go down and sub for either Andy or Ranger Doug if they couldn't make a gig. And so I'd get to go down there and just be a guitar player all night long, maybe sing two songs all night long and didn't have to talk in between songs and be the front man and get to be a musician like I've always been.
Guys, let's listen to a little bit off that Time Jumpers album called Yodel Blues. We'll have a bit of that song. Take a listen. Guys, let me talk just for a moment about contemporary Nashville. You know, I mentioned, Vince, the television show, which has been pretty successful. What does that tell you about the place that country music now occupies in the musical spectrum of the United States today?
Well, I think it's a lot of people have said that it surpassed Austin as the live music capital of the world, which it never would have years ago. And I think a lot of that is just attributed to a lot of attention to the city. The period of the 90s was huge for country music in its popularity, and the Nashville Network was out, and CMT, and all that. And it's starting to get that way again. It's starting to finally get the visibility with Blake Shelton being on The Voice and Keith Urban being on American Idol and Taylor Swift being as popular as she is. There's a ton of attention on our city. And then the show has been over the top. You know, it's been... It makes our city look great. You know, it's basically a drama soap opera based in Nashville, you know, centered around the music business. And you watch it, and some of it you roll your eyes and go, well, it's nothing like that. And some of it is spot on, you know. So I'm really, really excited that they picked up the show for next year. And I've gotten to know a lot of those cast members. They're really supportive of our town. They come out. They come into the clubs. They come down, sit in with us. They play the Opry. And they're really plugged into the city, and it's been a really big home run for our town.
And it's certainly introduced a new generation to country music, and we've got a listener on the line who wants to address that. Kurt is calling from Reading, Massachusetts. Kurt, you're on with Vince Gill and Paul Franklin.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. Hi, guys, I love your music.
Thanks, pal.
Thank you.
I'm calling in response to a previous caller's saying that there's no good country on the radio. And I'm wondering what you think about the lively presence of country on college radio. In Boston, we have two great examples, Cousin Kate on ZBC from Boston
sure.
College Sunday morning,
uh-huh.
and Lost that. Highways on WMBR from MIT. And also on BUR a few years ago, I heard Merle Haggard talking about his recent CD. I think it's called I Am What I Am. And I went out and bought it the next day.
Paul?
Yeah, I think. Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I think there's a resurgence of this music. Count Basie said it best. He said there's only two types of music, good and bad. And I think that the good stuff always surfaces. You know, I don't know that it'll ever become mainstream again. But I think that there are alternative means to listen to the music. Certainly, college radio is a bright future for this purist style of music. But I'm glad to see it.
Well, I think that to answer your question, from my point of view, is it doesn't matter, when something great shows up. There's a lot of great stuff that's coming out of this town these days, and it may not be always on commercial radio. Some of it is, but some of it isn't. And the thing about looking back into the past is, even in the era of Buck and Merle and all the eras of the history of this music, there have been a lot of lame records that were made in those generations too, that they've just been forgotten. And I think greatness is still what everybody wants to hear. You want to hear a great singer sing a great song, hands down. Pop music's not the same as it used to be. R&B is not like it used to be. Rock and roll is not like it used to be. And country shouldn't be either. I think that I always tell a joke. I said, my granddad used to say, if we all liked the same things, everybody be hitting on your grandma. But, I have an open mind when it comes to music, and there's a lot of this contemporary stuff that I do like. There's a lot that I don't. But there was a lot back in 1961 that I liked and a lot that I didn't.
We've got a caller from Vince Gill's home state of Oklahoma. Jonathan is on the line from Tulsa.
Money.
Jonathan, go ahead.
Hey, John, thanks. Vince?
Yes, sir.
And Paul, nice to hear you guys on the radio. I listened to your album last night, as a matter of fact. I was dinking around on the computer and caught it. And I loved it. It reminded me a lot of the Notorious Cherry Bombs CD that came out several years ago. But I noticed that you brought up James Burton. You were talking earlier about a lot of the side guys and studio guys that don't get a lot of attention. I caught you and James Burton and
Albert Lee.
Albert Lee playing together at a festival somewhere, and it just looked like you guys are having a ball. It was such a treat to watch you guys play. And what was it like playing with Alvin and the guys in the hot band? Because you guys went through a ton of really great musicians. And then real quickly, I wanted to ask Paul about the pedal steel player for Hank Thompson. He always had kind of a signature lick. And you could talk about that, and I'll hang up because I'm probably going to lose my signal. I'm just coming in Tulsa.
I think that for me and Paul, we're both a couple of geeks. We bought records because of who was playing on them. I'd buy a record just because a guitar player was playing on it. I wouldn't even know who the artist was. And that's the kind of musician I always wanted to be, was learn from somebody. And, the greats, like you referenced Albert Lee. Albert is one of my heroes, and he kind of, him and James were a big part of teaching me the way to play the Fender Telecaster like I did. I wanted to play like those guys because they were so good. And I just think that the musicians, somebody pointed out to me that this is the first time since the 60s that a musician has been credited equally with an artist on a record that has come out of Nashville. And
Vince, you mentioned playing. I don't want to run out of time without getting the chance to hear you guys play again, because we've got a Buck Owens song, which was a hit for him, number one hit in 1964, called Together Again. I understand you're prepared to play it. Hit us.
We can do it. probably one of the top five greatest songs in history. Together again. My tears have stopped falling. The long, lonely nights are now at an end. The key to my heart you hold in your hand. No, nothing else matters. We're together again. Together again. Oh, my gray skies are gone. You're back in my arms now, right where you. Is living again. No, nothing else matters. We're together again.
Pretty, pretty stuff, guys.
Thank you, buddy.
And Vince, I want to ask you a cosmetic question. Your hair is about Buck Owens length now, but I watched a YouTube clip the other day of you being interviewed. You were on Pure Prairie League with Dick Clark, and you not only towered over him, but you had some serious hair back at that point. When did that cease to be a part of your persona?
Oh, you know, I had a flat top or a burr my whole life because that's what my old man made me get a haircut like. And as soon as I left home, I said, man, I'm going to grow that hair out long. Show my daddy. And I had some long hair back in the day, but I cut it all off, I think, in the 80s.
I think it was about as long as your wife's hair is now.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Thanks for pointing that out.
Guys, talk about what's next for you. What is your next musical project, and are you going to reach back again or do something totally different?
Well, for me, I'm going to make a record on my own starting next week, and I think I'll probably take the rest of the year getting that finished. But I think Paul and I would be foolish if we didn't attempt to do something like this again. I think that what's been remarkable is just to get people talking. The interest in this record has really blown both of us away.
Yes.
You know, I think the fact that
people are
interested.
Do you do it for your own satisfaction, or can you sell
Absolutely.
A lot of it too?
Yes.
Well, maybe both. You know, maybe both. I mean, there's nobody doesn't want to sell records, I can assure you. But yeah, I think, you know, we might try this again in the future because it's been so well received. We're really grateful for people that have been on board and really gotten this record. You know, it really is a great testament to how great some of the old music really is.
Paul, who else is out there that you think is underappreciated that you'd like to pay tribute to?
Well, from the past or current?
If you reach in the past.
Yeah. Certainly George Jones, there's Ray Price, Johnny Cash. You can just go on and on, all the iconic figures. Carl Smith, I mean, you can go back to the beginning.
Conway Twitty would be one you'd put in there.
Conway would be great.
Because he had such a great presence in his early career with steel guitar with the late John Huey, who played with him and played on all those records, and another great instrumentalist.
Guys, I wish you the best of luck with this record. It is gorgeous from start to finish. I want to thank you for being with us. Listeners, you can hear all of the tracks that you've heard this hour by going to our website, onpointradio.org. We're going to go out of this segment on Merle Haggard's Holding Things Together as interpreted by Vince Gill and Paul Franklin. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
I just signed it, love from Mama, so Angie would know. Holding things together ain't no easy thing to do when it comes to raising children. It's a job meant for two. Alice, please believe me, I can't go on and on. Holding things together with you gone.